Hello, this is Paul French. Welcome to another edition of the Ethical Corporation podcast. I'm the China editor, but I'm in Hong Kong today, and a slightly different subject. I'm here with Pete Spurrier, who's the author of a book that's a best-selling book here in Hong Kong called The Heritage Hiker's Guide to Hong Kong.
That's right.
And it's a walking book with walks, but looking at the heritage of Hong Kong and how you can find what's left, although I did notice that there's a lot of pictures of places where you can go and see. In your book, there's a picture of a beautiful building, and when you get there, there's just a modern office block now. There's rather a lot that's come down, which is the point of today's talk, because something very interesting has happened, I think, in Hong Kong that affects corporations, that affects people and NGOs, that's not something we talk about a lot in the magazine, but is important. And that is that Hong Kong, a city that really for the last, you know, has never really had a great heightened awareness of its heritage,
yeah,
although there have been groups, now things seem to be changing. So maybe you could give us an overview of from 1997 to sort of just recently, you know, what was the attitude of sort of companies, property developers, the government here towards old buildings, preservation, the heritage of Hong Kong?
Yeah, that's right. 1997 was the date when things began to change, I think. Before then, Hong Kong had been a place where people stopped over temporarily, whether they were expats here on a contract or they were Chinese people moving from the mainland, hopefully to a better life elsewhere. Nobody cared too much about local culture. Equally, it was a place where money was to be made. Then after 1997, when we were told that it was going to be Hong Kong people ruling Hong Kong, I think that gave people more of a foundation, really, and they started to think, oh, maybe, you know, we should take more care about what is our heritage. It's a new thing, really.
But we have a very, very strong role here for property development companies. The government owns all the land in Hong Kong.
Yes.
It parcels it out. It sells it by auction. And, you know, a handful of property companies control most residential property, the 101 gleaming shopping malls here.
That's
and
right.
Everything else. So property developers have a real role in the economy.
They do, and the government relies on that tight land supply for its revenue. That is a problem. And that is where we're now getting the conflict between the government and the people. Whereas the people want to preserve icons like the Star Ferry, the Queen's Pier, and the government can't seem to let go of its addiction to land revenue.
Because I found it interesting that a lot of the property developers I talk to here, when they do a shopping mall or something, or a residential property development, they now talk very much about ethical stuff, they talk about green stuff, they talk about the environment, they're recycling water, lower power, you know, all the stuff we're used to, you know, escalators switching off when no one's on them, all that sort of stuff is very big here. And we should mention one of the biggest landowners here is the MTR, the subway system, train system. And they're in shopping malls and residential. They're not like London Underground, right? I mean, these people own blocks of flats and shopping halls. You know, they're very keen on getting a good rep in terms of that, and yet they've kind of just, you know, bulldozed a large amount of stuff around the city. And I mean, if you could talk about a couple of things we've lost. I mean, the clock tower at the ferry pier was one, but there's been a number of sites.
Yeah, that was the one that galvanised the young people, really, of the time, which is very encouraging. But even just now, the old central government offices on Lower Albert Road, the government's going to move into new quarters at what was the old Tamar, HMS Tamar. So that Upper Albert Road, which is a lovely green oasis in the middle of central, very needed, that should pass back to the people, really. And yet the government can't let go of this fact that it's got to try and make money out of the land.
Yeah.
So it's proposing knocking down the old West Tower and replacing that with another shopping mall in central, which will require, as with the Marine Police headquarters in Tsim Sha Tsui, demolishing a hill, thereby removing some of the context of that piece of land.
Yeah, well, we all know the harbour's got smaller and smaller over the years, isn't it?
So
the joke is that soon you'll be able to pole vault across
it
if Hong Kong ever gets the Olympics. But can you tell us exactly how the campaign with lots of young people coming out around the ferry pier and the clock tower and the ferry pier, how did that kind of happen? I mean, who got control of that land?
That was resumed in order to build another bypass, actually, along the harbour, which is very, very sad. If you're going to resume land, which people... Actually, that piece of land was called Edinburgh Square. It wasn't just the ferry pier, but
it was the
piece of land between the pier and City Hall. It was a place where people used to arrive in Hong Kong if they were commuters before the tunnels were built. A place where people used to go to take photos, to fish. You know, a very nice communal piece of land. And it was resumed not for anything vital, but for another highway along the harbour front, which is very poor in terms of planning.
So, you know, what we saw was this upsurge of, it was students, right? It was like young people who all got together. Yes. It was also one of these kind of Twitter revolutions, right? That's it was right, everyone talking on the internet.
Yeah, and then that moved on, actually, from Starfrey Pier to Queen's Pier. Then, and that seemed to ignite a feeling of almost revolution in young people. And they've carried that on to the present day. They've besieged LegCo for many nights when LegCo were about to vote on the new high-speed rail to Guangzhou. Yeah. They've been demonstrating on behalf of villages in the New Territories.
And trees. Village, the loss of trees.
And the loss
as well,
of trees, which is wonderful.
Ancient trees,
yeah. 20 years ago, if people cared about this at all, the government wouldn't respond. You know, 20, 30 years ago, the government was able to reclaim the whole of Sha Tin Valley and build a new town for 1 million people. And nobody peeped about it. If they did, they were slapped down. It was a colonial government.
Right.
But now the government has to be seen to be taking the people's views into account, while at the same time being beholden to developers, on the other hand. And it's a very hard
position. Even though we should mention that it's not a full democracy here, as
not
most
at
people
all,
would
not
know.
Not at all.
Right?
But, you know, Hong Kong being a colony until 1997, that was a great anomaly, a real something which should have passed into history. After that, things were meant to become a little bit more modern. You can't have a paternalistic government anymore. It's got to respond to the wishes of the people.
Okay.
Yeah.
But now things seem to have changed a little bit in the last, well, really only just 6 or 8 months, right? That instead of big property companies getting hold of these businesses, it seems that the government has shifted and is handing out heritage and preservation projects to local groups, to community groups. What are they doing?
I think it has to try to mollify the public anger. Yeah, so they are. The police married quarters on Aberdeen Street in Central, that will be turned into some kind of arts and design village, which is a good move. Equally with the Central Police Station, which we're looking at now.
Yeah.
Victoria Prison.
And the Magistracy, which is a beautiful
magistracy
building.
On the other corner. A wonderful collection of 18, I think, heritage buildings in a compound right in the middle of Central. That's going to be converted into a network of galleries, arts venues, performance venues, cafes, restaurants.
And we should also point out, these are not just high-profile places in the centre of town. I mean, these are places out in the New Territories. We've seen places out in Kowloon. You know, small villages, old buildings, one-off buildings. I know there was one that I heard of that was being turned into a boutique hotel, and the public was denied access, and now the public have got to have access to things.
Yes. Some remote ones, like the old police station at Tai O. Mm. That was built in, I think, 1899. It was as soon as Britain took the New Territories, they built police stations across Lantau.
Right.
That's sat there unused, more or less, for half a century, as Lantau, that end of Lantau became depopulated. That now will become a boutique hotel. I hope that works.
So how much is this new attitude embedded now? I mean, how much is this going to be the way it works?
I think
is
so.
It,
I think
is, or is it a fragile?
I think, you know, the bad planning aspects hopefully have passed us by. We're now seeing the end of projects which were put in place 10, 15 years ago. From now on, government planners will have to take into account what people want. Crossing our fingers.
Yeah. And any reaction from the property developers who, of course, are now not getting their hands on quite as much land as they want? And land is a very valuable, precious, limited commodity.
Of course,
here,
it is,
right?
And like very, very valuable. People like Li Ka-shing will always threaten to leave Hong Kong if they see their interests threatened.
Yes, and they will just go to mainland China, where idea of giving control of preservation projects to ordinary people is just not even close to being on the agenda.
That's right, and where it's much easier to eject huge numbers of people from farming land.
I mean, we've talked before about all the evictions around the Olympics and around Expo and around other projects that have gone on in China, and there's no sign of that slowing down.
No, and yet it's harder to do that here now. So I think the developers will either have to change their policies here or move elsewhere.
So at least in Hong Kong, you think it is genuinely, you know, it's a good story?
I think it is. I think it's changed for the better. I think we'll see more successes from now on.
And hopefully we can get the property companies to come and be involved in these projects, but on a less dictatorial basis.
Yeah,
right,
I think they are already. I think that police station at Tai O is being run by a developer. So hopefully they'll learn from that. If they can make money from it, they'll try heritage-related projects in the future.
Brilliant, thanks. Look, I'll give your book another plug. It's the Heritage Hiker's Guide to Hong Kong.
That's correct.
It's
published
by Formasia.
Now,
if you're in Hong Kong, I have to say this book has been in the top 5 best-selling books in Hong Kong.
It has, it's done very well.
For months and months
in
now.
In November, I think.
Yeah.
Lots of lovely
It seems to be doing very well.
Yeah,
and it's got lots of lovely photography. It's published by Formasia. If you're in Hong Kong, you just need to go into any bookshop. If you're outside Hong Kong, you can go to the Formasia website, F-O-R-M-Asia.
Books.com.
Books.com, or I guess it's on the usual online...
It's you'll find it on the internet.
Just Google around Pete Spurrier. That's the one. Spurrier. We'd like to give you a plug if you're, as you've come on. Thanks a lot. That's another podcast from China, something a little bit different, but I think a subject that interests a lot of people. Pete, thanks a lot for taking some time out to come and have a chat. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot.